Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Warning, you can blame the Supreme Court for most of the profanity in this episode.
Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by Apostate Farm Spiritual Insurance. Are your teenagers starting to show signs of doubt? Have they taken to sinful vices like asking questions and reading? Well, act now to lock in their absolution before somebody introduces them to the Euthyphro dilemma and the problem of evil. Apostate Farm, because indulgences are making a comeback. And now, the Scathing Atheist.
This was really, at its core, Steve, not about contraception. And if they could have forced businesses on this issue in this manner, there would be nothing stopping them for advancing the rest of their liberal anti-religious agenda.
I'm Oliver from All Too Common Law, and the jury has returned a unanimous verdict beyond any reasonable doubt. We did, in fact, evolve from filthy monkey men.
It's Thursday.
It's July 3rd.
And Ken Ham's Ark still doesn't have the engine power to jump a shark like he wants to.
I'm No Illusions.
I'm Heath Enright, and from Plaza Hotel, New York, New York.
And Fritz Carlton, Podunk, Georgia, this is The Scathing Atheist.
On this week's episode, murder suspects in Nigeria can now avoid jail by pleading atheism.
The SCOTUS will let Volkswagen send their Jewish employees to special camps outlined by their sincerely held religious beliefs.
And if you see a suspicious package, you're probably at a glory hole.
But first, the diatribe. December will mark the 5-year anniversary of the last time I was in a church. Now, I'd been an atheist for quite some time by then, of course, but my wife and I were visiting my parents for the holidays, and after much cajoling, my dad talked me into attending the Christmas service. He'd found this great church, see, and I'd love it, see, and I'd get a chance to hear him play in the band, and he was going to do a little one-man play during the service, and it would mean so much to my mom, and if I just said yes, he'd shut the fuck up, so I put on my Sunday best, I loaded up a couple extra episodes of The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, and I sat near the back. But it became clear pretty quickly that the church was too small and too crowded for me to get away with listening to podcasts the whole time, so instead I listened to all 26 hours of the service. Now, it started off fine. There's a little story about Jesus showing up to wish himself a happy birthday with some destitute family, and then there was some bad music and some bad acting. Sorry, Dad. And then there was the main sermon slash screed in which the guy who pretends God exists for a living and pays no taxes on his home because of it stammered on all spittle-chunking and veiny-faced about how persecuted Christians are in America nowadays. Now, when you and I hear persecution, we think of the systematic mistreatment of one group by another, since that's what that word means. But Christians apparently understand persecution about as well as they understand evolution. Exhibit A is the fact that the persecutory slight that elicited the ire of my dad's preacher was some waitress wishing him happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas. Yes, that's right. Failing to acknowledge the cultural supremacy of their savior's birthday is persecution. It's their go-to accusation at this point. They're being persecuted. Anytime they lose a privilege that they never should have had in the first place, they cry persecution. In fact, if you go to persecution.com, you will find a Christian website there. Being forced to stop leading public school students in prayer is persecution. Being forced to serve gay people despite their brazen butt fuckery, yeah, that's persecution too. In fact, when Mississippi passed their bullshit law that allowed businesses to discriminate against gays, a bunch of businesses put, you know, these stickers in the window telling everybody gays are welcome here or whatever. The Christians called that persecution. We're talking about a sticker that basically says, we promise not to persecute anyone, and the American Family Association labeled that persecution. Now, look, if this was just a bunch of silly hate groups like the American Family Association pissing, whining, and redefining, it would hardly be worth getting worked up over. But apparently, this mutant definition of persecution has worked its way all the way up to the goddamn Supreme Court. Now, think about this for a second. If you strip away all the legalese, the real issue at stake in this Hobby Lobby case was the fact that the Christian owners of this business think that recreational orgasms are evil. Now, apparently it doesn't matter that they're wrong because they're religious, and according to our courts, being religious is the same as being right. Hell, their chief claim here is that certain contraceptives cause abortions. This is not an esoteric God claim. That is a demonstrably false claim. It's been proven by science. And beyond that, it was already ruled on by the fucking Supreme Court. So the Supreme Court even agrees that they're wrong. They just don't give a fuck. Writing for the slim majority, Samuel Alito said, quote, according to their religious beliefs, the contraceptive methods at issue are abortifacients, end quote. According to their religious beliefs, not according to fact. In direct contradiction to fact, doesn't matter because it's a religious claim. But of course, this is not really a case about religious freedom. It is a case about Christian privilege. The court didn't rule in favor of Hobby Lobby because they thought the ACA violated their religious rights. They ruled the way they did because they too think recreational orgasms are evil. They ruled the way they ruled because they've accepted the bullshit definition of persecution that the Christians keep peddling. So they hide behind religious protection, even if they have to pretend that corporations have religions to get there. Can we prove that the morning after pill doesn't cause abortions? Of course we fucking can. We have. Can we prove that orgasms aren't evil? Of course we can. Can we prove that universal access to contraception is a good thing for the society? Of course we can. Can they provide any evidence of any kind to bolster their claims? Of fucking course they can't. But none of that matters because it's religion. And it's the right religion, too. Because you can bet your ass the Supreme Court that thinks corporations can have religions would feel way different if those corporations were bowing to Mecca. Hell, they basically said that in their decision. They said this ruling doesn't count for wacky shit like Jehovah's Witnesses not covering blood transfusions or religions that don't believe in vaccines. It just covers this exactly as wacky shit that happens to line up with the religious beliefs of 5/9 of the Supreme Court. The very fact that they made a distinction between this case and other similar religious beliefs is proof that this is not about religious freedom. It's about Christian privilege. It's about weaponizing the Bible as a tool of discrimination. It's about cloaking your political beliefs in religion and protecting your undeserved social dominance. The majority of the Supreme Court believes that it is okay to let people make compensatory decisions based on an understanding of human development that's been outdated since the first time the Wright brothers got high, as long as their ignorance is sincerely held. Just that much more evidence that the Supreme Court needs less religion and more vaginas.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast and bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is still reeling American soccer fan Heath Enright.
Oh.
Heath, are you ready to vent?
How does that happen? Belgium is tiny. I mean, I get it. They're right there next to Holland, Germany, France. Basically France with some good Aryan genes to make them better. But there's enough soccer fields in the U.S. to completely cover Belgium.
Right.
We just lost to mini France in a sport. This is embarrassing. It'd be like Puerto Rico beating Team Europe in something. It's not reasonable.
It was pretty awful, pretty hard to watch. Well, I'll cheer you up with some much worse news. In our lead story tonight, we have the extraordinarily fucked up case of 29-year-old Nigerian chemical engineer Mubarak Bala, who made the mistake of telling his family he was an atheist. Shocked by this admission, his family then launched into a series of logical, evidence-based arguments in favor of their position. Which is a Nigerian euphemism for beating him, drugging him, and locking him in a mental asylum.
And according to Sharia lawyer Bella Shehu, Bala's father had the family date rape and abduct his son to protect his safety.
Yes.
Because, quote, once people got a glimpse that he is denouncing the existence of God, he could be lynched and the house set on fire, end quote. So instead of anti-lynching laws, northern Nigeria instead pre-jails atheist lynch victims. That's the route they took.
One negative things to happen to him. Now, I'm no psychiatrist, and I don't want to diagnose this guy from afar, but if your dad holds the Orwellian title of State Directorate of Societal Reorientation,
yeah, That's maybe, really the guy's title.
Yeah, right. Maybe you do have to be nuts to tell him that you think Allah is a fairy tale. So I'm not going to say this dude isn't crazy, but even if he is, he's imprisoned for atheism, and that's pretty damn wrong.
Shouldn't the CIA be inciting a civil war over there by now? I mean, the bottom half's Christian. They have oil.
Right.
No brainer. What do they
what
even
are we
do?
Paying
what
would you guys, them for? Yeah.
What do you guys say you do here? And in Up With False Hope, Down With Dope News, New Zealand had to remind the Universal Church of the Kingdom of God that they have a shitty name with two ofs, and that while they are permitted to blatantly lie in holy books and sermons, the world of advertising will not tolerate quite that same level of dishonesty.
Yes.
So they have to
exactly. Yeah, take that, religion. You're immoral by the standards of the industry that pays young women to fuck cheeseburgers on camera. That's so, how bad you are.
So this particular church put out an ad that basically claimed, if you're suffering from, among other things, deteriorating health, which is everybody that's not immortal, and or incurable diseases, then you'll probably need to sign up for our impossible healing class. There's no charge, but most people donate 10% of their income or estate.
Either
depending
way.
On if our impossible healing class works.
The fucking ad for this thing, it read like they had 30 seconds on the clock for irresponsible things to claim prayer does. Here's the actual list of shit that the ad says they can pray away. Incurable diseases, like you said, undiagnosed illnesses, so don't worry about the doctors and shit, injuries, broken leg, we got you, weight problems, pill dependency, and sick children. Yes, pray away your insulin dependency and your kid's leukemia all in one sitting, by all means.
Call in the next 10 minutes, we'll throw in a free homeopathic elixir bottle. Just add water.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So here's what happened. Mark Hanna, co-founder of the Society for Science-Based Healthcare, which should not have to exist. This guy noticed the ad, and given his extensive medical expertise, he was uniquely qualified to dispute their claim about the prognosis for incurable diseases. So this guy lodged a complaint with an advertising watchdog agency, and since falsehoods are banned, churches pretty much can't say things in ads anymore. So good job, New Zealand, for treating religion like cigarettes.
Well, unfortunately, it's not all that good. The watchdog agency, you know, they can tell them to fuck off, but they're under no legal obligation to actually then fuck off. But I did love the church's excuse. They say in response that they're not saying that they're going to cure the problems. They're saying that they're going to help you convince God to cure your problems. So it's basically like paying a hooker to introduce you to her slutty friend. Anyway, and in Corruption Junction news tonight, the Egyptian government has announced a new public education program designed to steer the nation's youth away from the dangers of atheism. In what's being hailed as a commendable effort to ensure that the high point of Egyptian civilization stays right where it was, the effort is intended to, quote, confront all the issues that negatively affect youth and hinder steps of development towards the future, end quote. Such hindrances apparently include a post-Viking Age worldview.
Exactly. So they're going for futurism via Islamic fundamentalism?
Right.
Really?
The road less traveled.
Wow. So apparently after Arab Spring comes nuclear winter. Yeah. Wonderful.
Well done, sir. Included in this effort to combat rationality are the Ministry of Civic Education, the Endowment Ministry's Mosque Management Service, and a team of psychologists all working together to find the best possible way of inoculating Egyptian kids against knowledge. While children's programs like Credulous George and Where in the Underworld Will Carmen Sandiego Burn for Her Impious Curiosity have been rejected, they are reportedly considering a public service campaign entitled The Less You Know.
I'm Barack Hussein Obama, the world's most famous Muslim, and I'm here to tell you that women are a fire hazard during men's state. Be safe. Quarantine your women. The less you know.
The minister in charge of the program compared it to a previous effort to combat religious extremism, pointing out that much of the violence in Egypt stems from either religious extremists or the people those religious extremists keep killing. He explained that, quote, the ongoing conflict will lead youth to either be religious extremists or push them more towards profanity and atheism, end quote. So one way or the other, we're fucked here. We're going to be stuck with a bunch of well-armed, irrational, violent fanatics, or a bunch of atheists that say fuck a lot. Both of those are pretty bad. So we're gonna fight both fronts here.
And in Throwing the Book of Mormon news, attorneys for the Utah-based Orgy Club filed suit against disgruntled former head of their Canadian branch, Winston Blackmore, claiming his new British Columbian splinter sect stole their name by registering in Canada as the Jesus Christ Church of Latter-day Saints without approval from Vatican Salt Lake City. In big trouble. They also claim he clearly stole their idea for tricking the local government and a bunch of women into letting them get away with polygamy.
Yeah, I'm sure they got a
two counts of
trademark on that or something.
Infringement.
And while he was at it, by the way, he also stole his name from the evil industrialist in an episode of like Captain Planet or something. Winston Blackmore?
The ninth, yeah.
How evil, right. It just screams sinister monocle and red button that says do not press. And if you think about it, how awful a person do you have to be before you think to yourself, you know what would help my credibility? Would be if people thought I was the Mormons.
Said Winston Gargamel Blackmore to the Smurfs. So reports suggest a spokesman for Mormonism threw up a little bit of irony in his mouth when he made the following statement. When weird polygamist spinoffs of Christianity use our name, it makes us look bad. Just in case you're curious, I'm told he did swallow back down the irony vomit, but had some trouble, made a little bit of this noise.
We have a little more
bit,
of that.
A little bit of bubbly water.
And while we're at it, you know what? We want to sue Mitt Romney, too, for the binders full of women thing. That made us look like assholes. And we want to sue Clark Kent. He stole our magic underwear idea. We were doing that way before him.
So the Mormons are sitting around trying to figure out why book sales are down and why people keep calling them for tickets. And they decide someone's clearly messing with their trademarks. It's time for a lawsuit. And they're like, so you guys think it's the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical Brutally Mocks Our Entire Existence like 8 times a week in the middle of Manhattan?
Nah,
it's probably the hugely influential cult leader in Western Canada. Let's go ahead. That guy.
Densely populated part of the world there. Isn't it? And in Sometimes They Fuck Grown-Ups news tonight, Catholic Reverend Sergio Labrizzi was arrested in Sicily last Tuesday under allegations that he'd used his position as the head of a Catholic charity for immigrants to procure sexual favors in return for assistance in visa applications. This blowjobs for amnesty program was apparently going on for at least 5 years and, in true Catholic style, was by no means restricted to adults.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to be judgmental, age-wise. Another one of these fun mental images here, though. These Catholic priest out there on the docks in Sicily, I guess, peddling his wares to what, fugitive stowaways stepping off the boat? Like, cocks for docks here, cocks for docks. Passports for passports. Come on over. Really?
Now, Labrizzi was suspended by the church following his arrest. Bishop Pietro Mario Fragnelli released a statement condemning the abuse, saying, quote, not only because it may be a crime, but because it seriously damages the dignity of the priestly service, end quote.
Really?
Really, Bishop Fraggle Rock? You really think that you guys have dignity that you could now lose?
Reputation issue. Yeah.
Yeah, right, really. I've seen your fucking hat, dude. Nobody with dignity ever wore an upside-down pointed cranial scrotum to work.
Maybe they're hiding the dignity in the scrotum hat. It's pretty big. So. But here's how desensitized we are to priest sex scandals at this point. Seriously, the article about this from Religion News Service says, quote, the priest's arrest is particularly embarrassing for the church, given Pope Francis's strong stand in support of the immigrants flooding the area, end quote. So yeah, the immigration issue snafu, that's the particularly embarrassing part of this for the church, really?
You knew we raped people, but...
And wipe your chin, and benvenuti in Italia.
Yeah.
Moving on.
That's how it works.
In I Believe That We Will Sin news... Muslim theocracy nations had extra trouble this year competing at the World Cup beyond the normal difficulty related to less talented players and never getting a scrimmage due to international sanctions against them. In a perfect storm of lunar cycles, asinine rules, and FIFA governing, the tournament coincides with the Ramadan for the first time in 28 years.
Yeah, so. Ramadan, it's kind of like a holiday designed by people who want you to think suicide bombing is a really good option.
Right, so the Ramadan is the month-long, big-deal, pain-in-the-ass Muslim holiday during which time believers must spend dawn to dusk completely fasting from food, water, sex, and involuntary emotions, apparently, right. Also, which makes obviously no sense. This means Muslim players think, I guess, God wants them to spend 90 minutes running after a ball in the rainforests of Brazil without a sip of water or any food that day. It also means idiot busboys at my restaurant have their fucking bare feet in the sinks in the back where the raw chicken goes all the time.
Ew.
Because I guess Allah wants you to bathe in salmonella regularly. It's one of the other stupid-ass things they have to do.
But see, that's the thing. Like, there was a point to Ramadan back when the villages needed to cycle through the old people really fast, but it's kind of outlived its usefulness at this point, right?
Sounds reasonable. And finally tonight, from the Boobs, Tubes, and Lubes file, Pastor John Piper of the Ask Pastor John webcast insists that watching a TV show that contains nudity is equivalent to watching porn, which is equivalent to personally stabbing Jesus.
Which is actually what he said.
Yep.
Makes you kind of think Pastor John is really bad at jacking off. I don't get it. Every time I do this, I end up with a spear wound in my gut and a crown of pearls. It's just... And those are not the stigmata most conducive to masturbation, if you think about it. The other ones are much more useful, even the feet.
Well, the gut wound could be useful, but it doesn't matter. So in response to a question on a recent show, which suggested drawing what Piper sees as an arbitrary line between Game of Thrones and snuff films, the pastor said, quote, "If we choose to enjoy or pursue impurity, we take a spear and ram it into Jesus."
That's a real quote. Quote.
So, a kitten dies and a savior gets impaled?
Damn.
Well, I stabbed Jesus twice since we started Headlines. And I'm not left-handed, so it was harder. More difficult. You know what I mean.
Got to be specific. And therein lies the key distinction here, though. It's no great mystery how to tell porn from a show with tits in it. Are there people naked in the show long enough for me to go limp back to limp? If not, it isn't porn. You don't beat off to Game of Thrones. You beat off after Game of Thrones to porn.
If you don't come full circle. Yeah. I do both, but there's still an obvious difference between porn and nudity.
Yeah.
That's why we have separate entire words for them. But if this guy's going to try to include HBO and like DVDA in the same boycott, it's like getting falsely accused of cheating on your wife. All the hassle, no... new pussy. So I say we come up with some actual porn versions, get our money's worth on this. 30 seconds on the clock. Pornified TV shows to spite the savior and stab him directly in the eye. Go.
How about Dr. Who's Your Daddy?
Nice. All right, since we're talking about HBO series, I say it begins and ends. I'm going way back here with Cream On.
Oh, nice.
Well, ends.
Nice.
Ends with.
See, I was sure you were going to go with the Sopranos. How about Charles and Large? Going even earlier.
All right. Splooge McDucktales. Or Fucktales with Splooge McDuck. One of those.
You got to be accurate. And just because I'm sick of people saying it can't be done, Horminge is the new black.
Well done. Yeah.
Tell me what I
rare.
Can't rhyme.
Very rare. But Happy Sprays.
Nice.
And with the black light, you've got glowing stains. Show me that vertical smile again. Popular theme song.
How about We Love Lucy from both ends? Locked in tight like a pair of Chinese finger cuffs.
Well, somehow we haven't yet mentioned any interracial little midget people hand job stuff yet. So wouldn't want to be accused of being remiss or racist or insensitive or whatever.
Oh, no.
So, what about different strokes?
Oh, nice. Nice.
Little folks.
You're so awesome if I could follow that up with a Webster joke. How about Honey Boo Boo Cocky? Whatever you do, do not let that one conjure any mental image at all, by the way. Clear your mind.
No. Everyone must absolutely right now Google Here Comes Honey Boo Boo. And also, for the uninitiated, Bukkake. That's
no,
B-U-K-K-A-K-E, I believe.
You've learned Bukkake. Your lesson by now, I'm sure.
Everybody pause and do that right now.
And if you take his advice, just remember, some Photoshops can probably get you thrown in jail. Just throwing that out.
Okay, so interracial midget hand jobs, little people hand jobs, check. Bukkake, check. Thanks. Good work. As long as we got the Yahtzee sheet out here, this really fucked up Yahtzee sheet we have. Notice we don't have any urine category stuff yet, so let's go ahead and check some of that stuff off. What about Golden Shower Girls?
Nice.
P. Arthur.
Yeah. I guess at that age, the golden shower is rarely intentional, but which reminds me, how about Breaking Bladder?
Nice. All right, what about a gay version of the urine category? We got to check that one too. Piddle Douse on the Ferry.
Oh, nice, dude.
Number one new show on the Nitrogen Network.
You better hope it doesn't drop to number two.
This is a slippery slope. Get shit like 21 Dump Street, Two Broke Girls, One Cup, Thunderscats.
Well, any headline segment that ends with shit jokes is a good headline segment, as I always say. So let's wrap it up right there. Heath, thanks as always for joining me.
I got one more. Pee-wee's Spray House.
Nice.
Throw it in there. Pee-wee's Spray House.
And when we come back, Jake Farr Wharton will be here to give the show an air of international allure.
My snowballed wife. Last one, I promise. Girth vaginal conflict. That's it. That's it. Last one. Because it's a stretch.
Yeah, no,
it's
no.
It's time for the Atheist Calendar portion of the show. This is the monthly couple of minutes that we set aside to get you caught up on all the great atheist, secular, and skeptical meetups going on around the country and around the world. We did all the July stuff last week, but there's a ton of stuff going on in August as well. We'll start off this week in San Antonio, where the Freethinkers Association of Central Texas is welcoming David Smalley of Dogma Debate Radio for a showing of the film My Week in Atheism, complete with a Q&A afterwards. The Atheist Alliance of America will be holding their annual convention in Seattle this year. That starts on the 7th of August, runs through the 10th. Sean Fair Cloth, Dr. Steven Pinker, Dr. Richard Carrier, and a lot more. And from what I hear, these guys put together one of the best conferences in the country. So if you're anywhere near Seattle, try to make that happen. On the same weekend, we have the Oklahoma Freethought Convention starting on August 9th. That'll be in Tulsa. It'll welcome Secular Coalition for America's Executive Director Edwina Rogers, along with Jamila Bay, C.J. Werleman, Nathan Phelps, and author of The Skeptic's Annotated Bible, Steve Wells. That's a two-day conference in the part of the country that needs it the most. We've also got the third annual Colorado Secular Conference coming up on the weekend of August 15th. That starts Friday, runs through Sunday, and welcomes such notable luminaries as Jamila Bay, Mikey Weinstein, Greta Christina, Matt Dillahunty, Seth Andrews, Hemant Mehta, and more, including some comedians, some music. Great lineup, and weed is legal there from what I understand, so all kinds of reasons to make it to this one. At the end of the month, the Pennsylvania State Atheist Humanist Conference is taking place in Pittsburgh. Really solid lineup there, including Jerry Coyne, Annie Laurie Gaylor, Jerry DeWitt, Vicki Garrison, friend of the show Dan Finca, John Loftus, and a lot more. And finally, no matter where in the world you happen to be, you can join the Freethought Blog's third annual online conference. They've done some really cool stuff with it before, and though the schedule isn't set for this year, I'll provide links where you can go to get the most up-to-date information as it becomes available. You'll find those on the show notes for this episode, along with links to all the other events we've discussed today. And if you're involved with a conference that our audience might want to attend, let me know. I'd be happy to throw you a free plug. You'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com.
A man wrote the Bible.
A whore is what she was.
If it's a legitimate rape,
it makes her a slut, right?
Hey, cooking can be fun.
Hey, I'm proud of a man.
This week in misogyny.
I know that sometimes it can seem hard to pick your way through all of life's choices, but have no fear, ladies. The powers of paternalism are working hard to save us all that trouble. So first, let's get rid of that pesky question of what you should major in. And it turns out the answer to that question is absolutely nothing. That's the advice of Rabbi Shalom Cohen, the spiritual leader of the Shah's political party in Israel, who reminds women in college that they're taking up valuable seat space that could have a scrotum in it. In a strongly worded letter to the ultra-Orthodox community, he warned about the dangers of women seeking higher education. In the letter, he said, quote, "Our rabbis, the sages of Israel, unconditionally oppose academic study," adding, quote, "In addition, the material in the colleges is based on research and scientific methods that contravene the Torah," explanation point, end quote. So yeah, not only are these evil women learning stuff, but they might be in danger of learning true stuff. But now that you're armed with the lack of education, what kind of job should you be looking for, ladies? Well, according to Georgia congressional hopeful Barry Exploding Tits, Barry Loudermilk, you might want to consider a career in politics. Just make sure it's okay with your husband first, and once you're in office, be sure to ask him what you should do. Loudermilk dropped these pearls of wisdom in the middle of a bigoted tirade about how the First Amendment really only applies to Christians. So yeah, the thing about female politicians wasn't even the dumbest thing he said during that statement. Of course, now that employers no longer have to cover women medicine, you might be considering celibacy. But if a career in the Catholic Church appeals to you, you'll still have to contend with a stained glass ceiling. In the first interview of his papacy with a female reporter, Pope Francis essentially spent the entire time dodging questions and visibly restraining from telling the reporter to go and make him a sandwich. When asked directly if he thought there was an underlying misogyny in the Catholic Church, the Pope said, "The fact is, woman was taken from a rib." And then he laughed. And then he told her it was a joke. Twice. Because apparently that uppity bitch wasn't even laughing. That's all I've got for you this week, but I'd like to close tonight with a special Go Fuck a Cheese Grater to John Roberts, Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, Anthony Kennedy, and the fat Catholic one that thinks the devil is real.
Christian kid goes to his church. He says, "Hey, Holy Father, I'm trying to read the Bible, and I hate to be a bother, but I think someone removed the parts that act as moral guides and replaced them with some boring, sexist, racist genocide. I'm combing through and seeking all the good stuff you allude to, but instead I'm stuck with cryptic Jewish sacrificial voodoo. The forgiving, loving, merciful, wise Lord I hoped I'd find is absent, and instead there's one who's lost his fucking mind." And the priest said, "Son, within this book's the wisdom of the ages, the secrets of the Lord's desires just dripping from its pages, the way the universe was wrought, the point of our existence, but if you want to read it right, I'll offer my assistance. You see, you can't just read it Genesis through Revelations, as some eternal laws have reached statutes of limitations. There's a certain way of reading through these Bronze Age Jewish epics that ensures you miss the bad stuff and find the precious bits of ethics. In Genesis, the benefits are done by chapter 2. You know the stories after that, so it's better to thumb through. With Exodus, the rest of us have studied that one for you. The Heston flick is better, but even that one's sure to bore you. Leviticus, a bit of this is pertinent today, but none of it applies to you unless, of course, you're gay. And Numbers, what a slumber reading that one would induce. Trust me, half the book is just spent counting all the Jews. Deuteronomy has got to be the hardest book to read. There's nothing there you need to know, that much I'll concede. With Joshua, my gosh, you'll want to skip that one as well. And ignore the folks that tell you it's as violent as hell. And Judges, no one trudges through that long and pointless text. Samson's pretty cool, but all in all, it leaves you vexed. To tell the truth, the book of Ruth is really short and ungermane. You can read it if you want to, but it's better to abstain. Samuel through Chronicles will leave you catatonic, full of history that's blisteringly dull and histrionical. Ezra's just an extra little post-exilic tale. No need to bore yourself with its superfluous detail. Nehemiah's just some guy, you know, he doesn't do that much, and Esther's just your average Jewish princess with a grudge. Your frontal lobe will reel at Job, as the moral's pretty brutal. It basically says being good and loving God is futile. Stay calm when you see Psalms, because it's a million pages deep, and sure, some of them are decent, but it'll put your ass to sleep. And don't bother with the Proverbs, despite their wise, profound appearance. If you read the bits on beating kids, you'll be frightened of your parents. But when you reach Ecclesiastes, settle in and take your time. The Old Testament will never get any closer to sublime, so read each chapter there and savor every fucking word, because the 18 books that follow are increasingly absurd. Then just skip ahead to Jesus, the Lord's sole begotten Son, read a little bit of Matthew, John 3:16, and then you're done. But the kid responded, "Father, there must be some better way." So the priest said, "Sure, kid, skip the book. Just trust everything I said." When it comes to things like indigenous genocide and mutant sports that compete for the title of football, Australia still lags far behind America. But in terms of secularism, they're so far ahead of us that people like Ken Ham and Mel Gibson had to come here. But that's not to say Australia is entirely lacking in gross abuses of church-state separation, so here to help us parse a recent win for Australian atheists is genuine Australian Jake Farwarden. Jake hosts the Imaginary Friend Show, though he calls it the ImaginaryFriendShow.com podcast because he's not taking any chances. If you haven't heard the show before, think cognitive dissonance but sexier. So Jake, first of all, welcome to The Scathing Atheist.
Thank you, dear sir.
Happy to finally have you on here.
Oh, I know. I'll be honest with you, Noah. I have felt really offended for a really long time. So it's good to be less offended today, now that you've finally invited me on.
Oh, well, you know, we have an hour to kill nowadays, so we can
bring on second-tier folks
as well.
Nice.
So, no, I invited John specifically to talk about a recent high court ruling that struck down government funding for school chaplaincy. But before we get to the specifics of that, I feel like a lot of our listeners just spit out half-swallowed beverages at the term school chaplaincy. So can you tell us what the hell is up with that? I'd never heard of such a thing.
Yeah. In 2006, the then Prime Minister, John Howard, said that he was opening a national school chaplaincy program. And that was on the behest of Australia's now Environment Minister in name only, Greg Hunt, bringing this proposal to the Prime Minister, John Howard, and basically saying, we want to organise a way for Christians to, or for Christian evangelists to be able to proselytise legally in schools.
Wow. And so they have free reign to proselytize to these kids? Or, I mean, does a kid have to come to the chaplain, or can the chaplain, like, pick somebody out that he thinks is sinful?
Well, it's actually funny. So when the program initially came in, there was just raucous outcry from everywhere, effectively, because, you know, Australia is, as you sort of mentioned in your introduction, is and always has been a fairly secular type of country. And what happened was this program was enacted and the outcry was effectively, you know, we don't want you to be able to proselytize to our children. At which point the Prime Minister said, they won't specifically, you know, like that's not their entire role. Their entire, you know, their role is basically to provide some level of fellowship to them. But the way that the Australian government actually enacted the program was that they were giving money to a whole series of very right-wing, very ultra-conservative, fundamentalist organizations there to train the chaplains. And by train, I mean they were given a two-day course on how to indoctrinate children. Literally, that was their entire training. So effectively, the Prime Minister said, you're allowed to go in there. You're not allowed to proselytize specifically. You know, what we want you to do is to provide pastoral care, just to, like, you know, help these kids get along, you know, help them have a good, nice life. But then the owners of these companies that were receiving the funding, the Scripture Union Queensland and Generate Ministries, their managing directors were all saying, oh, guys, this is totes your opportunity to get in there and totally evangelize and make good little Christian soldiers out of the people. So,
right. Yeah, I was going to say, obviously that is just paper thin, or they'd be employing secular counselors that could help all of the kids, not just the Christian ones.
Yeah. So, sorry, I was going to say that actually did come along. Eventually, that did actually occur. You know, they did expand the program to be national school chaplaincy and secular worker type program. The reason for that is in Australia's constitution, there is a section, I think it's 116, that says the government shall make no law with respect to religion. And there's also a secondary thing saying that there shall be no religious test for a government worker. I'm paraphrasing, unfortunately. I don't know the exact wording. And what occurred in practice with this program was that you literally had to have some religious affiliation. You had to effectively get the tap on the shoulder and the nod of the head from your local minister, your local Christian minister, in order to get into the schools. So as a consequence, there was a religious test there, and the government was making a religious, effectively
right.
a rule that was benefiting one very specific religion.
So they gave the atheist kids separate but equal chaplains.
Well, so that sort of came in after the first High Court challenge run by Ron Williams, the atheist hero in Australia and super sperm generator. He's got seven or eight children,
wow.
Depending on which news report you read. So it's actually really funny. You read one news report from one newspaper organization and he's got 12 kids, and then the next one he's got six, and the next one he's got 25.
Well, yeah, he's an atheist. So he's totally obviously eating them and having them.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true, yeah.
Okay, so let's get into that, though. Now, like you said, this is actually the second time the High Court has ruled on the federal funding of school chaplaincy. So let's start with the first ruling. What happened with that one?
So with the first one, those two little parts of the Constitution that I mentioned that seemed to quite clearly contravene the Constitution, according to this program, that is what Ron wanted to run the first High Court case on. Mm-hmm. Now, when he took that to his lawyers, the lawyers basically said, you know, you've got no chance on this. Unfortunately, you know, as much as we'd love to look at these things and, you know, as much as you'd love to, considering you're obviously foaming at the mouth, you know, you want to go and dive on these two little parts of the Constitution that the government is contravening. But unfortunately, the lawyers said, no, there's no way. It just won't stand up in court. It's too weak. It's not robust enough. You'd think that if the government contravened the Constitution, a lawyer would want to take it up. But no, unfortunately, apparently, it just wasn't enough. So instead, what the lawyers did was they targeted another section of the Constitution. I think it's Section 61 from memory, and I could be wrong, which refers to the ability of the Commonwealth to directly fund programs that are enacted by the state. So effectively, it stops the Commonwealth government, the federal government, from directly funding programs for the states, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that was what the first High Court challenge was won on, eventually won on.
But that was a bit of a short-lived victory, as I understand it.
Literally 6 days after, Education Minister of Australia, Peter Garrett, he's announced 6 days after the High Court ruling that they've in fact found a way to completely work around the finding of the High Court and fund the National School Chaplaincy Program. And at about that stage, that's when the funding for the National School Chaplaincy Program actually reached, I think it was $666 million.
That's a fun coincidence.
It is. Oh. So following that, Ron Williams, decided that he would launch a second High Court challenge on another factor that the High Court of Australia raised, which was the welfare of students. Because effectively what the program was claiming was that the students of Australia were getting something in return for this funding. You know, effectively, Australians pay in their taxes, obviously, which go to the federal coffers, and the federal government decides how that money is doled out. And those programs that the federal government creates are supposed to provide some level of benefit to the wider community. And that kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
One would think, yeah. That's kind of Absolutely. The whole idea of publicly funding education.
Absolutely. And so what the second High Court challenge was about was effectively, firstly, looking again at the federal government's right to directly fund these programs in the states. Mm-hmm. But then secondly, it was looking at the actual welfare of the students, you know, whether they were actually receiving any level of benefit as, you know, in return for the investment provided by the government. And it was simply found that in that second High Court challenge that they weren't getting any benefit. They were literally getting nothing out of this this enormous pot of money.
Well, do you think that the government's just going to legislate their way around this ruling as well, or will this one have more legs?
I think it's fair to say that we just don't know. Mm-hmm. At this stage, it looks like it's dead. The Treasurer and the Prime Minister have basically said that it's dead. I kind of think that this may be the end of the school chaplaincy program on the basis that at the moment, there are probably a few other things that the government wants to fund.
Gotcha.
So it's possible that it might be the end. It's possible.
Like we still haven't found a budget cut that Tony Abbott doesn't like. So.
Yes.
He'll take them wherever he can get them. And I should mention to our listeners, of course, that are really American, that Tony Abbott is Australia's prime minister. And
yeah.
For the ones that are really, Catholic. Really American, a prime minister is kind of like a president. So.
he was formerly going to be, he was actually going to be a priest. He trained to be a Catholic priest, spent 2 years in the Catholic seminary.
Really?
Yeah.
He's like, I want to do something useless, but not completely useless. Yeah. Politics. That's close.
Yeah. Apparently, he said he was kneeling down one day in church praying, and
you have to specify in a Catholic church.
Yeah. Well, I thought I should. Yeah. But yeah, no, he was down on his knees praying one day, and decided that he didn't want to be a priest anymore. I suppose he'd taken too much of the being on the knees in front of the priest, and decided that he wanted to go into politics. So anyway, I honestly think he would have been far more useful to Australians if he had stayed a priest, personally.
Yeah, because with some people, just their absence is a benefit. But we're off on a tangent here. Back to the main story. This second ruling from the High Court, it said that, yes, this is illegal, and no, you can't fund it. But despite that, you guys are still stuck with these chaplains a little longer, right?
Yeah. So the funding for the National School Chaplaincy Program always used to be quarterly. But unfortunately, this government seemed to have foreseen the demise of the National School Chaplaincy Program in the High Court of Australia and decided that they would pay out an entire year in advance.
Really?
So the program is now, it's now lost its oversight because it's been found to be an illegal program, you know, illegal against the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So it's been struck down. The program is gone. The chaplains now have zero federal oversight, yet they are fully funded until the end of the year.
Oh, that's not necessarily good. Yeah, holy shit.
No, it's absolutely awful. It is absolutely awful.
A little bit of a power vacuum in there.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, there are, and I realize I've been talking a lot, and I do apologize for that.
That's why I brought you on.
But one of the great issues here is this student welfare thing. You know, right. These are not people who necessarily have life experience. These are not people who necessarily have any tertiary, let alone high school qualifications. These are not individuals who are trained counselors. You know, these are not individuals who are capable, let alone qualified, to help the development of children who might need it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, and it's just going to increase the likelihood that kids are going to be seeing a school chaplain instead of a qualified counselor. Obviously, what other purpose could there be to having these chaplains there to begin with?
Well, that's right.
It's a lose-lose all the way around. Now, I would like you to respond to Coalition MP. I'm sorry, is it Laming? Andrew Laming? Something. Anyway, he's talking about this. I read this quote earlier. He says, "I look directly into the eyes of the loose alliance of Greens, gays, and atheists who have mounted this continuous campaign against chaplaincy, and I tell them that they are clearly out of touch." Now, is he right here? Do the Australian people support the chaplaincy program? Or
okay, so that's an interesting question. I don't know who the hell that is. I've never heard of that person.
So he's nobody ass guy that an American newspaper could get to make a comment.
He's clearly a well-known politician, obviously.
He's got lame right in his name, though.
But here's the thing. Okay, so there is a good chance that a number of schools, and certainly when it came to the first High Court, there were a number of questions asked of administrators working in the schools of what they thought of the chaplains. You know, not so much what they thought of the chaplaincy program, uh-huh, but what they thought of the chaplains. Now, from their perspective, the chaplains were effectively a fully funded member of staff that they could use for any purpose that they desired. So they effectively had a free extra, you know, non-qualified teacher,
right,
who was able to do things like, you know, yard work, like fill in for things like take care of students when they weren't in class, you know, like go on excursions, that sort of thing. So it was basically a fully funded extra hand on staff. So in a number of cases where administrators of schools were asked, what do you think of your chaplain? They were very positive. They were very positive.
Uh-huh.
But when the Australian people in general were asked about the National School Chaplaincy Program, most of them said, "Fucking what? What the fuck are you doing in our actual, you know, state schools that are supposed to be completely secular?" You know, most people didn't know about the National School Chaplaincy Program because it was just never made to be a big thing in the media. Unfortunately, we are let down by the same murdocracy,
right,
that you guys are in the US. So we don't unfortunately have the fourth estate here to properly question the legitimacy of what the government does. So in the main, most Australians either don't think favorably of it, mm-hmm, or don't really know what it is, what its function is, and therefore can't really justify its existence.
Right. Well, I guess the good news is that it's already been 6 days plus since this high court ruling. So obviously they're not going to work as quick if they are going to subvert it. Of course, we'll continue to keep an eye on this one. I really appreciate you joining us to help shed a little light on it.
It is absolutely my pleasure.
Well, thanks again for joining us, Jake. And of course, if you want to hear more from him, you can check out the Imaginary Friends Show. You'll find it on iTunes, Stitcher, imaginaryfriendshow.com, and of course, the show notes for this episode.
Thank you, Disa.
Run, grab the youngins, folks. It's time for Lucinda Illusions Bible Stories for Kids.
Gather round, boys and girls. Today we're going to open up our Bibles to Genesis and learn about the biggest temper tantrum that God ever threw. And there's animals, so it's a good story for kids your age, even though most of them die. Now, once upon a time, there was a man named Noah who had a wife and 3 sons. Back in Noah's time, all the people were evil, but Noah was less bad than the other people, so God decided to speak to him. And he told Noah that he was really, really angry because all the people kept being so evil. So God decided that he should drown every single one of them, along with their kids, and their babies, and their animals, and the wild animals, and most of the plants, because otherwise people would suffer. But luckily for Noah and his family, God decided to let them live, along with 2 of each of the animals, because if God didn't love incest so much, he probably wouldn't have fucked his own mom. So Noah built a giant ark, just like God asked, even though he was 600 years old and it was impossible. And once he was finished, all the animals of the world showed up to fall into the boat. And each of them carried a backpack full of 365 lunches so they wouldn't get hungry along the way. And then it started to rain. And Noah and his family got into the boat, listening mercilessly to the echoing screams of humanity, desperately clinging to driftwood and treetops as the inevitability of their expiration became clearer and clearer. The few who were lucky enough to survive the first day or two were treated to a horizon full of bloated corpses as the wildlife began to float to the surface. And as the incessant rains brought them closer and closer to oblivion, they comforted themselves with the fact that their demise would at least bring the end to the horrid stench of death. But inside the boat, Noah and his family were perfectly safe. So after a whole year spent shoveling shit and eating ever moldier bread on a boat full of urine-stained floors and unwashed animals, the waters finally started to go back down. Noah parked his boat on top of a giant mountain and proceeded to get completely shit-faced. After all, if your dad was stuck on a boat with you for a full year, he'd want to get drunk too. And it must have been a really good binge because he passed out completely naked. But while he was unconscious in a puddle of dried vomit, his son Ham saw his penis and did a very shameful act. The Bible doesn't tell us what the shameful act was, but after the story we'll break out the crayons and you can draw a picture of what you think it was. Now, because of the thing Ham did, his son was cursed for all eternity, and even the people who weren't cursed had to have sex with their own family and stumble over necrotic carcasses of God's innocent victims for the rest of their lives. The end.
It's time for the part of the show that comes next, listener feedback. This is the part of the show where we piss off the people who wrote in to tell us how pissed off they already were. But we also answer questions and shit.
Our first message comes from Atheus, who told us on our Patreon page that he likes the longer episodes more than the girthier ones, but wonders if we can rib the episodes for his pleasure and involve the anus a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly. Wasn't sure where he had those headphones. But if you'd like me to add a little bit of rhythmic bass here and there, I can do that for you. You're a donor.
Ears, nose, throat. We'll find the clit eventually, we promise.
That's an otorhinolaryngology joke. We also got an email from Mark who asked why we spend so much time covering gay rights issues on this show. He makes it really clear that he's not faulting us for doing it, but he wonders why our show and so many other voices in the atheist community are so outspoken about gay rights.
Not that there's anything wrong with it, of course.
No, of his best friends have gay rights.
No, we're actually outspoken about human rights. We just have a much more reasonable definition of human than churches.
Right.
Or Citizens United.
Yeah, the way I look at it, the religious folks are picking on the people that they see to be on the margins of society. So not only do we have a moral obligation to help them, obviously, but atheists are probably the next minority in line to lose their rights if Christians get their way in this country. So it's like a really altruistic self-interest.
Okay, so John was pissed about the close of last week's headline segment.
Yes, he was.
Noah made a joke about the barbaric history of British colonialism. I followed it up with a joke about Nazi appeasement, which I am fully aware, by the way. That was what the U.S. did. I am aware of that.
Yeah, never said it.
And we finished with a joke about how England would have been useless in World War II without the aid of their former colonies.
Yeah.
And John took exception without hearing the tacit satire sound effect that goes along with pretty much everything I say on the show. So, sorry we didn't make that a little more obvious. Yeah. But I think there's also an editing thing with the joke about France, didn't you say?
Right, yeah. So, first of all, apologize to the audience, to Heath. A little of it got cut in editing, so it kind of sounded like Heath said that England was occupied by Nazi Germany.
Did not.
He didn't say that and doesn't think that. That's my bad. Now, as for the bellicose nationalistic dick waving that made up the rest of John's comment, the gist was that British people are superheroes and Americans are cowards. And he's probably right on that. I'm not
sure. Accurate.
I'm willing to admit that America has historically been guilty of failing to rush to war fast enough, but I think it's fair to say that we're working on that. We've made some big steps in the last couple of decades, you know.
Yeah, now we'll war all over your face before the condoms unwrap. We're ready to go. And exactly. Don't worry. We've already got Halliburton ready to clean you right up. Wipe you right down. Got a contract in place.
Yeah, so for the record, John, I'm very sorry that three throwaway lines at the end of a bit failed to fully encapsulate the nuances of the most complex global conflict in human history.
Right, we don't actually think the Brits were really polite to the Nazis and then threatened to tell America that they weren't being nice to the Jews. That didn't happen.
It was a joke.
And while we're on the subject, we also don't really think that the average Kenyan spends their day jogging with herds of nomadic gazelles. It's all a stupid Patriot Act. We're a stupid persona when I'm making fun of other Americans that actually do sound like that. Seriously, though, I am fully aware that American foreign policy over the last century has been largely awful and destructive, whereas the UK has been relatively reasonable over that same time.
True, yeah.
Also like to add, fuck France. Am I right, guys? This guy knows. Come on, UK,
freedom
you're back
fries.
With me.
Freedom
fuck France,
fries.
Right?
But I did want to make one correction that John pointed out as well. I said during that bit that England until recently had Charles Darwin on their money. I read that last year that he was going to get bumped for Jane Austen, but I didn't realize that didn't happen until 2017. So my bad on that. Chuck D is still on the money.
Yeah,
as John
indeed.
Said.
And finally, we have an email from Greg, whose job recently landed him in the secular progressive haven of Tennessee. He's new to the Bible Belt and wrote to us hoping Noah could offer some advice on how to handle this transition.
Right, and he also mentioned in the email that he wasn't looking for confrontation, so my first 11 pieces of advice are right out the window.
Yes, how about don't live in Tennessee, or learn to be confrontational. Those are pretty much your two options.
Well, honestly, that's a big part of it, because you can avoid it most of the time, sure, but eventually you're going to find yourself in that position. So it's good to be ready for it, prepare for it, but I was thinking that this would lend itself actually to a good top 10 list as well. So here is very quickly our top 10 ways to politely turn down an invitation to church.
Excellent. All right. Number 10. Can I bring my lesbian friend? She could really use a good stoning.
Hey, well, anything that starts with can I bring my lesbian friend will probably
work too well.
Number 9. I don't know. When I go to church, my stigmata always flares up, and it's embarrassing to the less pious people.
Number 8. I'd love to, but I'm part of a certain secret society. I believe I have to mention the name. We meet on Sundays. Not going to work out.
Yeah, folks in Tennessee would forgive you for missing church if it was to go to a KKK rally. Where were we? Number 7. I don't know. Something about the music in churches really gets to my Tourette's. And
Number 6. He's lying. I'm the one. Fuck. Ass. I'm the one with Tourette's. No, you should go. You should go. You'll enjoy. Cunt. You'll really enjoy it. Go ahead.
All right. How about number 5? Awesome. I'll bring my athame and my goat skull. You need those. At what kind of church is this we're going to?
Number 4. So it's kind of like an open mic night, right? Like a roast. So I just get up there and say whatever I want when the guy's done with his
service.
Thing.
Service. Number 3. So is Christianity the one with the Autobots and Decepticons, or is that a different one?
I saw in a cartoon that Optimus Prime's actually Jewish. So.
Oh, right.
Number 2. Sorry, I do football on Sunday. No time for a fantasy league. A little too much.
And the number 1 answer, I'd love to, but churches are evil institutions designed to fleece the masses whilst cloaking the unscrupulous acts of those that lead them, and I'd probably get pissed off enough to shit on the pulpit.
And that's all the feedback you get. If you want more, send us more emails. You'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com.
Before we tuck you in tonight, I wanted to thank Carl from the Post-Rapture Looting Podcast for inviting Heath and me on to help him celebrate his 100th episode. That episode is available now, and you'll find it linked on the show notes for this episode. Star-studded cast, a lot of rather brutal humor at Carl's expense, so in other words, really good time. Anyway, that's all the blasphemy we have for you today, but we'll be back in 168 hours with more. Of course, I can't cue the music until I've thanked Heath for his quintessential Heathness. I need to thank Lucinda for not one but two awesome contributions this week. Also need to thank Oliver from the brand spanking new All Too Common Law Podcast for providing this week's Farnsworth quote. His show's just getting started, but it strikes me as damn informed. If you want to check that out, you'll find that linked on the show notes as well. Of course, I need to thank Jake one more time for joining us. Incredibly nice guy, funny as hell, and one of the voices our movement is really lucky to have. His podcast, The Imaginary Friend Show, is one of the shows that inspired this one, so definitely check that out. You'll find that linked on the show notes as well. But most of all, I need to thank this week's most distinguished disbelievers, Dana, Chris, Rondi, Wolf, Scott, Shane, Nancy, Jonathan, George, Lee, Jeff, Other George, Other Chris, Other Jonathan, Craig, and Michael. Dana, Chris, Rondi, and Wolf, who are so clever they put Iocane powder in both cups. Scott, Shane, Nancy, and Jonathan, who mosquitoes know better than to fuck with. George, Lee, Jeff, and Other George, whose neuronal pathways needed HOV lanes. And Other Chris, Other Jonathan, Craig, and Michael, who are so sexy they can masturbate to themselves masturbating. These 16 candles in the dim stretches of ignorance have helped ensure that future generations inherit a world with less religion, less irrationality, and more archived dick jokes by giving us money. Not everybody has the money it takes to give us money, but if you have money that you don't need for important stuff, you can give it to us. You can do so by making a per-episode donation at patreon.com/scathingatheist, which you'll find linked on our website, or you can make a one-time donation by clicking the donate button on the right side of the homepage at scathingatheist.com. I'll compliment your sex organs either way. And if you want to help, but giving money to atheists is against your religion, you can also help us out a ton by leaving a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever, especially if the review is good. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission.
Seriously, though...
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.